Welcome, everybody, to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. This is Corinne, and like we always do, let's come together in silence for a few moments, finding a comfortable position, allowing the eyes to close. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, all we have to do is just pause and ask and trust that the guidance will be there. We are putting the Holy Spirit in charge by our request. Taking a nice mindful breath in and out. And coming together to our perception of this time and place. All right. Let's begin reading. We are in the Sparkle Edition. We are on page 23. It's the very beginning of chapter 2. The section in the beginning, again, page 23, it's the reinterpretation of defenses. And then if we are in the original edition, that is on page 20. It's chapter 2, part 2, the reinterpretation of defenses. So I'm thinking what I'll do is go ahead and read kind of slowly again. So I'll just pause after each paragraph, and if I have something to say, I'll say it. If anybody has something to say, please say it. If you have a question, it seems like because sometimes this can be on the dense side that it's helpful to take it slow. So that's what we'll do. All right, so the reinterpretation of defenses. When you are afraid of anything, you are acknowledging its power to hurt you. Remember that where your heart is, there is your treasure also. This means that you believe in what you value. If you are afraid, you are valuing wrongly. Human understanding will inevitably value wrongly, and by endowing all human thoughts with equal power, will inevitably destroy peace. That is why the Bible, speaks of the peace of God which passeth human understanding. This peace is totally incapable of being shaken by human errors of any kind. It denies the ability of anything which is not of God to affect you in any way. I'll just say that I really like that, those last couple of sentences, that it's a peace that's totally incapable of being shaken by human errors of any kind, and it denies the ability of anything not of God to affect us. And that to me is just so reassuring sounding and so very comforting. I'll just add, too, the sentence where it says, if you are afraid, you are valuing wrongly. And it just makes me think of how often we experience fear and how often, too, those fears can be linked to, you know, body types of things. You know, will I have enough money? Will I have enough food? Will I be loved? Will I be well? You know, will I be healthy? And so it's saying here, if you're afraid, you're valuing wrongly. So valuing the body is actually valuing wrongly, what it's saying. So our value, we're being asked to put that with the Holy Spirit, to give our valuing to the Holy Spirit. So those are my thoughts. All right. I can move on. So the second paragraph. And you know what? I'm just going to read the last two sentences of the first paragraph, just to put the next paragraph into context, because it is continuing the same flow of ideas. So again, at the end of the first paragraph, this piece is totally incapable of being shaken by human errors of any kind. It denies the ability of anything which is not of God to affect you in any way. This is the proper use of denial. It is not used to hide anything, but to correct error. It brings all error into the light, and since error and darkness are the same, it corrects error automatically. True denial is a powerful protective device. You can and should deny any belief that error can hurt you. This kind of denial is not a concealment device, but a correction device. The right mind of the mentally healthy depends on it. You can do anything I ask. I have asked you to perform miracles and have made it clear that miracles are natural, corrective, healing, and universal. There is nothing good they cannot do, but they cannot be performed in the spirit of doubt. So again, this paragraph is significant because it's talking about the proper use of denial, and that denial can be a powerful protective device. So what this is really referring to is how the Course is teaching us, along with the Holy Spirit's help, to deny the denial of truth. So we, that denial of truth, our sort of turning our backs on love, on God, and denying what we are, and, you know, choosing to enter into this seeming separate state of bodies and earth and all that, we're being asked to deny that denial. So this is where defense mechanisms used on behalf of healing come into play. So that's what this is talking about with the proper use of denial, and how denial then, you know, we're not using it to hide anything. So if we typically think about denial, we think about, like, you know, oh, there's a problem there. Let's say somebody has a problem drinking, and their denial is that they just refuse to acknowledge that there's a problem. They conceal it and they just don't look at it. But this is saying that this kind of denial is a correction device. When we deny that denial of truth, we can do anything the Holy Spirit asks of us with the Holy Spirit's help, which is also pretty cool, too.
Could we maybe elaborate a little bit more on this piece mm-hmm. of the paragraph? I'm just wondering how this idea of denial, as it applies to the Course, mm-hmm. that applies to your relationships to other people. Like, for example, uh-huh. I have a relationship in my life where I've been experiencing, I would say, some challenges. Mm-hmm. And I welcome them because I understand that all relationships are assignments. And give us something to learn from. But when we're talking about denial in terms of the Course's perspective, does this apply to how other people respond to you as well? Or is it more like personal?
Well, okay, good question. Let me see if I can tackle that one, and help me along if I'm not answering your question. Please jump in and ask more. So we're never asked to correct a brother. We're never asked, you know, if we're ever, you know, in a relationship and you know, let's say that person is saying something crazy or just acting, you know, really irrational or whatever, the Course is teaching us, rather than trying to fix them out there. It's all about turning within. It's about turning to, you know, our relationship to the Holy Spirit within us. So it's not that we might use, you know, denial to tell somebody, oh, I'm just going to deny what you're doing because it's not the truth. You know, that's going to sound pretty, probably pretty unkind and not very loving. What this is more speaking to is that when we find ourselves in those challenging relationships, in those challenging situations, and the Course is asking us, rather than coming from our egos and coming from a place where, you know, perhaps we think we know how that other person should be, et cetera, we're asked to give the whole situation, the whole relationship, the, you know, the what the other person said, what they did, we're asked to just give that to the Holy Spirit to and be willing to see it differently. There's a prayer in here, and I would have to look up exactly what page it's on in these editions. I know where it is in the FIP edition, but it goes like this. It says, "Take this from me and look upon it, judging it for me. Let me not see it as a sign of sin and death, nor use it for destruction." And it goes on and it ends with saying, "Teach me how not to make of this an obstacle to peace." So teach me how not to, you know, let this difficulty get in my way of knowing peace. But yeah, even just taking the first sentence of that, because it's, you know, we could even tease that whole prayer apart. Even just that first sentence, "Take this from me and look upon it, judging it for me," that's an act of saying, okay, what I'm seeing that's going on out there is some sort of manifestation of this, you know, separate state that we're in, and I am willing to, rather than to judge it or, you know, think that I know how it should be, I am willing to just give the whole situation and how I see it to the Holy Spirit, to my inner guide, and then that sort of transformation of how we might see it differently comes, you know, through us. Maybe the situation out there shifts. Maybe it's just totally an internal thing, you know, with you where your peace returns. You know, who knows exactly how it's going to go. But does that touch on?
Yeah, it helps.
Answering your question.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, that was, yeah, no problem. That was just the first thing that came to mind for me, that this whole idea of denial is never anything that we're doing alone. So it's always something that we're doing with the Holy Spirit. We're letting the Holy Spirit lead the way, because obviously if we think we know what to deny, or that something, you know, if we think we know the way, chances are we're probably going to get lost again. So that's where it's, you know, this is all about turning the steering wheel of our car over to the Holy Spirit and letting,
yeah,
our inner guide lead the way rather than us. So that does help.
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Okay, good. All right. So let's move on then to the third paragraph. "God and the souls he created are completely dependent on each other. The creation of the soul has already been perfectly accomplished, but the creation by souls has not. God created souls so he could depend on them because he created them perfectly. He gave them his peace so they could not be shaken and would be unable to be deceived. Whenever you are afraid, you are deceived. Your mind is not serving the soul. This literally starves the soul by denying its daily bread. God offers only mercy. Your words should reflect only mercy, because that is what you have received and that is what you should give." One thing that immediately comes up for me just in our conversation that we just had about relationships, and this last sentence where it says, "Your word should reflect only mercy because that is what you have received and that is what you should give." That's also something to keep in how do I want to say this? We also have to keep in mind that we have to be where we're at. So if we're in a relationship or a situation where we just really feel like we really, you know, need to blast the other person, that we need to get angry, we need to express it. The Course says, be a happy learner. Don't feel guilty about your lessons. Just go through them. So this isn't saying that our words should only ever reflect mercy. This is saying that, go through what you need to go through, do what you think you need to do, and eventually what we're going to learn is that way of, maybe let's just use, continually lashing out. Let's say we have a thing with anger. Eventually we're going to come to see that, like, wait a second, this isn't getting me anywhere. There's got to be a better way. And that's where, when we turn again to our inner guide and even take feelings like anger to our inner guide, that's when, again, these sort of shifts can come through us, where perhaps there are words that are kind that do come out of our mouths, but we can't be anywhere other than where we are right here, right now. We can't rush our lessons or skip over them. We've got to go through.
Yeah, like that's sort of where I'm at, I guess, with this one particular situation that I have going on. Oh. Is that there are things that happen, like, before I even knew about Course in Miracles and started studying the material. And so, like, for me, I feel like I've completely shifted.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this other person, even though I've been in praying every day and things like that, I don't know if they are aware. So it's like, because we're in different cities.
And
so I've got this stuff going on, and I feel like I'm following the system. But then at the same time, I guess my ego was thinking that they would respond differently. So I guess that's where I'm in a much better place now, because I can go, well, I can see, like, I can recognize where my ego was seeing their error before,
mm-hmm.
where
right.
I'm letting it go now to the best of my ability.
Yeah.
But it's still in that confusing place, because there's all this stuff that happened before. That doesn't define who I am now, but I have no way of telling this person that without, basically teaching them A Course in Miracles.
Right.
And,
I hear you.
Yeah. So
you're hitting on some really, really awesome points, because, on the one hand, like, even though they're not with you, like, My feeling, like, my gut sort of sense is that on some level they're going to sense that you're different. Like, maybe not right away, but there's going to just be some sort of, sense that they might get that there's something a little bit different about you now, although they might not, have any idea what to necessarily make of it. But it's awesome, though, that you picked up how you said that, you were touching on your own expectations that, now that you're different, that, like, you'll see it, either a shift in them, or they'll know that you're different, so maybe they'll be different. Like, that's awesome that you were able to recognize that, because even just that recognition is something to take to our inner guide and say, hey, here are my expectations again.
Yeah.
here's my expectations creeping in there. And there's the other thing that you said too that really stood out to me was about, you said something about your ego seeing their error, something to that effect. And there's a Course quote that says, if you're seeing the errors of your brother, sister, sibling, the Course is just using brother in a neutral sort of way, if we're alert to the errors in our brother, it's because we must be seeing through our own ego. So if we see our, you know, if we're seeing our brother's ego, you better be 100%, you know, willing and ready to look that, wait, I'm only seeing their errors with their ego because I'm seeing through my own ego.
Yeah.
You know, the Holy Spirit, who doesn't have an ego, you know, doesn't look straight past those errors. So
yeah,
it's a really fantastic barometer then that when we're alert to the errors in our brother, that we're seeing through our own and our own ego. And so then that's the sort of little red flag that can pop up, you know, for us to say, oh, look, you know, there it is again. Hi, ego.
Yeah.
And again, having that tiny, teensy little bit of willingness to just say, okay, Holy Spirit, willing to look at this with you too.
Yeah.
Yep. So I really liked, yeah, those were great, great points that you made. Awesome. All right, shall I read the next paragraph? Okay. Justice is a temporary expedient or an attempt to teach man the meaning of mercy. Its judgmental side arises only because man is capable of injustice, if that is what his mind creates. You are afraid of God's will because you have used your own will, which he created in the likeness of his own, to miscreate. What you do not realize is that the mind can miscreate only when it is not free. An imprisoned mind is not free by definition. It is possessed or held back by itself. Its will is therefore limited and is not free to assert itself. The real meaning of are of one kind, which was mentioned before, is are of one mind or will. When the will of the Sonship and the Father are one, their perfect accord is heaven. Did Paula just join us?
Yes, I did.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, everybody.
Welcome.
You're late.
Adrian and Cindy on the line, too.
What?
I'm sorry, what was that, Paula?
What page are we on?
We are on, in the 24. Sparkle edition, page 24.
Okay. Very good.
We just read the top paragraph beginning with justice is a temporary expedient.
Oh, okay. I got it.
Okay. So, no problem. We were wondering if you were painting, and we were hoping that someday we could see some of your paintings.
Oh, I'll email you.
No,
I'll,
that would
I'll
be great.
Send you some.
That would be great.
No, actually, I was watering my neighbor's plants because it's so hot and they're away.
Oh, that's nice of you. Yes. All right. So, what stood out to me in this paragraph was just that whole idea that, you know, God created us in his image and likeness, and we then decided to return the favor, meaning that, you know, as God created us, we are eternal and whole and without any kind of need whatsoever. So obviously that's, you know, not in a body, which has all sorts of needs. And, you know, we now in this earth level have returned that favor, and so we tend to think of God as, you know, having an ego like we do. So we then become afraid of God's will because of what we are projecting onto God, onto love. So that is just what stood out to me with that paragraph. Let's move on to the next one. This is some getting into some interesting stuff with defense mechanisms, which is actually kind of funny that we're reading this tonight, because today I was at a conference on the DSM, which is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, and we actually talked about defense mechanisms, again, on like an earthly sort of level. So this is going to be an interesting section, and you can hear again how Helen Schuckman and Bill Thetford, you know, they're both psychologists, so that's why we're talking about this. Okay, so I'll move on. So denial of error is a powerful defense of truth. You will note that we have been shifting the emphasis from the negative to the positive use of denial. As we have already stated, denial is not a purely negative device. It results in positive miscreation. That is the way the mentally ill do employ it. but remember a very early thought of your own. Never underestimate the power of denial. In the service of the right mind, the denial of error frees the mind and reestablishes the freedom of the will. When the will is really free, it cannot miscreate because it recognizes only truth. So here again, we're going back to this idea of denying the denial of truth. So the proper use of denial being that we're willing to give what we see to the Holy Spirit to see it differently, to deny our own denial of truth.
So it really, anything other than that is just doesn't work.
Yeah, we're hiding something. it said that earlier too. Where was it? That the kind of denial, that's the proper use of denial, is not a concealment device, but a correction device. So we're using denial to help correct.
Do we know we're doing it when we're doing it?
Probably not. you mean how we typically think of denial?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think maybe sometimes we're aware when we are, you know, having our more lucid moments. But I think that also there's probably a lot of times when we're not aware. So, because again, keep in mind too that these defense mechanisms are being used by the ego to keep the ego in place. So if we, I mean, I tend to think of us as course students as being, I think the course is training us to be extremely mindful of, you know, where our mind is and what it is that we're doing, because we're being, you know, trained, we're being asked to consistently look at that and look at it with the Holy Spirit. So I think we build up the capacity to, you know, recognize what it is that we're doing, but I think it probably slips in there and we don't realize it. And I think Carly joined us.
Yes, I did.
Hi, Carly.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hello.
Awesome. By the way, Carly, I don't know if you have the sparkle of the original edition or are you just listening?
I have the sparkle, actually.
Oh, you do? Okay, we're on page 24.
Okay, perfect.
We just read the paragraph in the middle of the page that begins with denial of error.
Okay.
Okay, cool.
Thank you.
So I'll keep going on that note because we're going to still be covering these defense mechanisms here in these next few paragraphs. False projection arises at a false denial, not out of its proper use. My own role in the atonement is one of true projection. I can project to you the affirmation of truth. If you project error to me or to yourself, you are interfering with the process. My use of projection, which can also be yours, is not based on faulty denial. It does involve, however, the very powerful use of the denial of errors. The miracle worker is one who accepts my kind of denial and projection, unites his own inherent abilities to deny and project with mine, and imposes them back on himself and others. This establishes the total lack of threat anywhere. Together, we can then work for the real time of peace, which is eternal. So I just think that this is so beautiful with, you know, and again, this is Jesus' voice speaking to us. If we have issue with that, that's totally fine. We can just think of this as like the Holy Spirit speaking to us. But this is saying that you know, Jesus or the Holy Spirit is you know, projecting, giving to us the affirmation of truth, that sort of truth can come from him to us, that we can then continue to, you know, allow it to extend. But if we are caught up in error, again, you know, with the ego, seeing through the ego, we're interfering in that process. But all we have to do is get out of the way. Like where it says the line, my use of projection, which can also be yours, is not based on faulty denial. So it's almost like it's just given to us. We don't have to do anything. We just literally have to kind of stop and be willing and be still. We're really asked to do so little. that later sentence actually kind of captures it. The miracle worker is the one who accepts my kind of denial and projection, unites his own inherent abilities to deny and project with mine, and imposes them back on himself and others. Any comments or questions?
Sometimes that's kind of hard to do.
To just stop and yes. Probably most of the time, right? Because we don't want it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we like kind of doing it our own way and calling the shots rather than, you know, placing our minds under this guidance that we think is something, you know, external to us, when really it's our will also that we share. All right, I'll read the next paragraph. The improper use of defenses is quite widely recognized, but their proper use has not been sufficiently understood as yet. They can indeed create man's perception both of himself and of the world. They can distort or correct depending on what you use them for. Denial should be directed only to error, and projection should be reserved only for truth. You should truly give as you have truly received. The golden rule can work effectively only on this basis. So I think that sentence, denial should be directed only to error, and projection should be reserved only for truth, kind of captures it. And I can just say, too, that, you know, in psychological terms, again, because, you know, Helen and Bill were psychologists, denial, as we typically think of it here in this world, is like, you know, there being a problem and just absolutely refusing to acknowledge that it's there, just totally denying it. And projection that we do down here is when, you know, what's an example? Like in the wintertime, I am typically cold, and so if I look out the window and I see, you know, the squirrels or like the deer walking by, and I think, oh, that poor deer or that squirrel's got to be freezing, you know, that's awful for them, I'm projecting my stuff onto them. They're fine. They live outside. So this is saying that use of projection should be reserved only for truth, where we are just projecting truth rather than something else. And so this is going to go on now. We have a list here of all these different defense mechanisms. And again, these are Freudian terms that we might remember from way back in our intro to psych classes. And so this is, you know, redefining them. So I'll just maybe read them straight through. Intellectualization is a term which stems from the mind-brain confusion. Right-mindedness is the device which defends the right mind and gives it control over the body. Intellectualization implies a split, while right-mindedness involves healing. Withdrawal is properly employed in the service of withdrawing from the meaningless. It is not a device for escape, but for consolidation. There is only one mind. So again, withdrawal being the idea that, you know, if it's being used as a defense, we're just withdrawing from whatever, you know, painful situation it is. This is saying, let's withdraw from the meaningless. Dissociation is quite similar. You should split off or dissociate yourself from error, but only in defense of integration. Detachment is essentially a weaker form of dissociation. Flight can be undertaken in whatever direction you choose, but note that the concept itself implies flight from something. Flight from error is perfectly appropriate. Distantiation can be properly used as a way of putting distance between yourself and what you should fly from. Regression is an effort to return to your own original state. It can thus be utilized to restore rather than go back to the less mature. And that's, you know, regression is when, like, you know, an adult regresses to suddenly, you know, start having childlike behaviors. So this is saying we can regress back to our original state, which is love. And sublimation should be a redirection of effort to the sublime. There are many, many other so-called dynamic concepts which are profound errors due essentially to the misuse of defenses. Among them is the concept of different levels of aspiration, which actually result from level confusion. However, the main point to be understood from this section is that you can defend truth as well as error, and in fact, much better. So truth needs no defense, really, but here in this, state that we're in, we need to work to remember truth. So that's how it's using the term with defending truth. So I thought that was pretty fun, especially since, like I said, I went to this conference today when we were talking about all these things. And to give a painful example, too, of some of these defense mechanisms, one of the examples that the speaker gave was with dissociation and how, let's say, a child who, experiences some really traumatic event, be it like sexual abuse or something like that, in order to survive, in order to hold that, in order for that child to hold themselves together, a defense mechanism is to dissociate. It's just to, mentally, almost like have an out-of-body experience. They just go somewhere else. They might not remember the event then down the road. And it just got me thinking, in this section about how, let me finish my thought there. If a child is using dissociation in that way, when they then grow into being an adult, typically what happens is that, that coping mechanism that once served to protect them when they were children now is like getting in their way. It's not helping them anymore. And so it just made me think about how here we are as spiritual children, and we're using these defense mechanisms from a, ego sort of standpoint, but the Course is here giving us an idea about how we can use them on behalf of truth. So I feel like
when a child does that, are they consciously doing that? Are they consciously dissociating, or is it?
I don't know how conscious it is, but it's something that happens. It's a protective move on their part. So I don't know if they know, what they're doing, but it is something that, some people do. Sorry for the super heavy example, but we can hand that thought over to the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, exactly.
So questions, comments, thoughts about anything, even if it's not related to what we just read.
Well, it's funny. I just had an argument with my daughter when we were on the beach. We went to the beach and had dinner, and I was so uncomfortable with this whole situation. I thought to myself, I should just get up and walk away from this. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny because when we got to flight can be undertaken in whatever direction you choose, but note that the concept itself implies flight from something. Flight from error is perfectly appropriate. So it would have been appropriate to do that because the error thinking that was going on there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right,
I think the thing that's so helpful about the Course is we really had quite a disagreement.
Mm-hmm.
And we were both able to really recover very rapidly. And we actually wound up going for a nice walk on the beach, and it turned out to be a very nice evening.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, doing this work is so helpful.
Yeah.
That you're not carrying those grudges.
Yeah. I love what you said, that that healing happens faster, that it's, how did you exactly put it? It was perfect. We're not just stuck in that pain for a long time. We have tools to return, back to peace again. So that's all.
Yeah.
That's perfect. Yeah. The Course works. Does your daughter do the Course too or no?
Yes, somewhat. Uh-huh. Yes. Yes, she does.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little, the text really gets her crazy.
Uh-huh.
But the workbook, is very helpful.
Yeah, yeah.
She has other avenues, too, that, she's on a spiritual path, but not a real serious Course in Miracles student, but she does know that forgiveness is really, you know, just letting go of all this stuff.
Right, right.
Is really the only sane thing to do.
Right, right. I love that saying, forgiveness is forgiving to the Holy Spirit or to our
yeah.
guide or whoever you want to call it.
It just
yeah,
amazes me sometimes how I still can allow myself to get into that position in the first place. You know? Oof. Okay.
Yep, yep. We're good at that, aren't we?
Oh.
Anybody else? You know, maybe I'll just I could read one more paragraph, and then maybe we can keep talking, of course, but it's the section just goes on. There's no natural end to the section for quite a while, so I'll read the next paragraph, too, and then we'll pause. The means are easier to clarify after the value of the goal itself is firmly established. Everyone defends his own treasure. You do not have to tell him to do so, because he will do it automatically. The real question still remains. The real questions still remain. What do you treasure, and how much do you treasure it? Once you have learned to consider these two questions and to bring them into all your actions as the true criteria for behavior, I will have little difficulty in clarifying the means. You have not learned to be consistent about this as yet. I have therefore concentrated on showing you that the means are available whenever you ask. You can, however, save a lot of time if you do not extend this step unduly. The correct focus will shorten it immeasurably. Paula, I kind of feel like that's what you just said, that, like, it saves time. This saves time, that you move through stuff faster, and that help is available whenever you ask.
Wow, that's really, isn't that something?
Mm-hmm.
How that came right after. I mean, this whole thing just applies so perfectly to what I just experienced.
Yeah. And the question, what do you treasure and how much do you treasure it? I feel like that's the
same. Oh, I want it to be right.
Right, exactly. That's exactly what was coming to mind. Do you want to be right or do you want to be happy?
Oh, yeah. I was, oh.
Yep.
So when
I wanted to be right even if I was wrong.
Was that you, Carly?
Yeah, yeah. So when Jesus is saying what do you treasure and how much do you treasure it, is he talking about, like, illusions versus reality?
Yeah, yep.
Okay.
Yep, definitely.
I feel
so
like...
Oh, go on.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's fine.
I have been trying to read the course. I just have been, I don't know, encountering, like, so much resistance. So, like, for a while I was like, oh, well, I'll just read the course on my own and, like, figure it out myself. And then I just was like, it just, everything, I guess I started questioning everything. Like, I don't know what any of this means. So I realized I really need this study group. So I felt like it was, you know, it's really important to come back to it. But it's just something that I kind of wanted to bring up and ask you about, like, all this resistance. I don't know. It's just, like, it's just really intense. And it's just funny how it manifests. And for the longest time, I didn't even know that I was resisting it. I just thought that I was, like, not smart enough for it. You know what I mean? Like, I just won't understand it. Like, whatever.
Right, right. I'm glad that you brought that up, because it's funny, too. I'll even say how it still plays out with me. Because keep in mind, too, with this resistance, like, the course is teaching us that our egos are not our friends. Like, our egos don't want us to turn back to love, because then we're withdrawing our belief from the ego. And our belief in the ego is the only thing that keeps it going. So that ego part of us is like, you want to do the course? You know, you can't understand it. Come on. And so it's funny, because the way that it plays out with me now is that I've been doing a lot of writing lately, and with writing about the course and having to put it into words, you know, to explain to somebody else, I have to be understanding it myself. And so when I sit down to write sometimes, it's like, I feel like I may have said this last week, I don't remember, but, you know, I'll sit down to write and it's like, oh, gotta pee. Oh, I'm hungry. Oh, let me go, you know, it's too cold in here, it's too hot in here. I'm not comfortable here, I want to move. So it's funny how that resistance comes out. You know, it might be that little negative voice saying, oh, you know, you can't figure this out, or, you know, you're too dumb, which you're not at all. It says we're perfectly capable of learning anything that we're asked to learn. We're perfectly capable of doing anything that we're capable, or that, you know, we're perfectly capable of doing anything we're asked to do. So it's just our ego then that bumps up that resistance, because it's afraid we're going to withdraw our belief in it, because we will when we realize we don't need it. So, so what you're describing is totally normal and totally part of this process too.
Well, doesn't he also say that when resistance is strong, not to be hard on yourself?
Yeah,
you know?
We don't have to fight ourselves.
You don't
so.
Have to fight yourself.
Nope.
A lot of times what I'll do if I'm really looking for help with it, I'll go to the workbook lesson. If I'm in the text and it's not happening, I always find the workbook so much easier to understand.
Right.
So, you know, that's an option.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and when you read, I mean, I have a lot of like feelings about the course. Like I have a lot of guilt. Like I don't want to read it out of order. I don't know why I'm like obsessed reading the text and then the workbook and then the manual. Like, I don't know what it is. Like, whenever I open up the workbook, I'm like, oh, I'm not ready for this. I shouldn't read this, you know, whatever.
Oh, that's the ego right there. Because that's like saying, oh, just forget it. Sure, that's
just
another ego ploy.
Totally.
And we're taught, you know, to put one foot in front of the other.
Right, right, to do it right. I apologize if I'm repeating myself if I said this on another call, but I used to just, when I was going through tough times with anxiety, be like, I'm failing the course, because, you know, I've always been a straight-A student. Like, I want to do it right. I want to do it
the right way,
yes. You know, the perfect way, and I'm failing the course. And my mom and my stepdad would be like, Corinne, you're not failing the course. You're doing the course. So there really, really is no right way. And doing the lessons at the same time that you're reading the text, you know, because there's no, it's not like they, you know, mirror each other. The workbook is just the workbook. It's a, you know, it's a really powerful process to go through that you can do them at the same time. You don't have to wait. But I totally get what you're saying. That's that little, it's just that little ego voice that's saying, nope, you got to do it the right way, which there is no right way.
The one thing I used to love about my mother is she'd let us eat pizza for breakfast. You know, she let us do things totally out of order.
Uh-huh.
And it was refreshing.
I love that.
Sometimes we'd eat sardines for breakfast. It's a good thing. She'd let us play with, she had Limoges china, beautiful china passed down from the family. And when we were children, we used to have tea parties with it and break it. And she'd say, oh, don't cry over spilt milk. You know, and these beautiful things we destroyed. This is a wonderful thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
We take it all too seriously.
Yeah. So Carly, the thing to do, just, you know, with noticing, and Paul is absolutely right, you know, the course says don't fight yourself, that if the resistance is really strong and your, you know, motivation is weak, just let it be what it is. Like, be where you're at, and if you feel guilty over that, that's just the ego showing up again. So that's another opportunity to say, okay, Holy Spirit, willing to look at this with you. But if you do feel like you can, you know, work with that resistance, that's just another thing with just saying, I'm willing, you know, to look at this with you. I'm willing to see this differently. So what I've been doing every time I sit down to write and I start having that urge to just quickly check my email or quickly hop on Facebook or quickly, you know, do whatever, I've been handing those little itty-bitty, you know, urges over to the Holy Spirit too. So it's just like, okay, I'm aware. There it is. It just popped up, handing it over. And then, you know, sure enough, I'm able to just settle in and do what I need to do. So it's just, it's all about that just tiny, tiny bit of willingness.
Well, and when you do that, like, I mean, this is, again, like another ego thing, but, like, I'm always like, oh, I don't feel better. I don't feel anything.
Uh-huh.
It's not working,
uh-huh.
You know?
Uh-huh. Yep, yep. Again, you're totally right. It's an ego thing. In the lessons, it actually says this in the workbook. It says you can actively resist them. You know, you don't have to like them. You just have to do them. You might not feel anything, or sometimes it might feel really profound. And it says that that doesn't decrease their efficacy. So I would venture to say that, you know, reading the book, like you're still getting it on some level, even, you know, if you don't necessarily, you know, immediately feel any different. So yeah, I think that's okay. Definitely.
And the other thing, like, I know it, like, says, like, the only rule is, like, to do the workbook lessons in order. Like, do you really feel like that's important? Because I've, like, glanced through before and seen lessons that I really, really, really want to read, but I'm like, oh,
uh-huh.
Well, I can't skip, you know, that whole thing again.
Right, right. That's a good question. I think it's fine to just read it, but it I know it does say to do it in order because they do build on each other. Like, you know, the beginning lessons are about sort of undoing our thought system, and then it's about, you know, learning, remembering really the thought system that we sort of threw away. So if you're actually going to do it in terms of, like, you know, everything that it says with, like, you know, whatever, spending 5 minutes each hour or whatever the thing is for the meditation, then it's probably a good idea to do them in order. But I don't think there's any Course in Miracles police that are going to say, don't read that.
You did it wrong. So funny.
It
weird
is
thoughts, like even saying them out loud, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's so weird.
Well, it's good. It's good to just, when you say it, you know, it's outing our ego and being willing to, again, take a look at all the crazy things that it tells us.
I think one of the things about this book that make it so powerful is, I mean, just like tonight, having that nasty disagreement and then sitting here and reading exactly what that was about.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And getting the peace and comfort that comes
yeah.
with reading this.
Yeah.
I mean, many, many times I'll come home from work furious about something and just, okay, I'm opening I just open the book. And it will, not 100% of the time, but a good deal of the time, I mean, it addresses exactly what the problem is.
Yeah, yeah. Paul, I'm glad that you said that, because Carly, and if you ever feel that your resistance is not too strong, meaning that you're, you know, willing to, you know, look at it with the Holy Spirit and still willing to work with that resistance, I think what Paula just said is a great idea with just opening the book at random. That's how I did the course for years and years and years. I only listened to it start to finish and, like, on the tapes in my car before there were CD players in the car. And so opening it at random, you know, I would always have that same experience where exactly what I needed to hear is what I opened up to, which, you know, if I was set on reading it cover to cover, you know, I'm sure I'd still maybe find something. But that can be a fun little exercise to do to, you know, if that were to feel right, of course, taking it to your inner guide and asking. But
yeah, I mean, I've done that before. It's the other thing is I've read, like, a couple books now about the course, and, like, everybody says different things. And one thing that I read talked about how, you know, you shouldn't open up the course at random and do stuff like, you know what I mean? I guess that's just ego in somebody else trying to tell you what to do.
Exactly. You know what? I'm so glad that you said that, because your teacher should be the Holy Spirit in you.
Absolutely.
Above what anybody else says or, you know, says about the course, regardless of maybe how much experience or whatever they have, that the course is literally, even when you're reading something and you're like, what the heck is the course saying here? Rather than, I mean, of course, looking it up online or asking somebody is fine, but what I've been doing lately is realizing, wait a second, I can ask the Holy Spirit to show me. What does this mean? So that is the whole, that's the whole point of this, is just, you know, strengthening that willingness to turn and listen to the Holy Spirit within us. So that should be your teacher beyond what anybody else tells you. Because
well, you
you're
know,
right.
Also, the support that you feel from challenging it like that
mm-hmm.
is tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I literally know I'm not alone
right.
in right. this world.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, this is tremendously helpful. And, you know, the answer might not come right away, but the answer will come every
yes.
time.
Yes, and it'll come in a form that we can recognize it for where
yes.
we're at.
Yep. And really and truly experience and understand.
Definitely. Definitely.
I wish I had something off the top of my head, but I can't remember anything right at the moment.
Well,
but I've had some really wonderful experiences with that.
I can share. I just have one because I'm writing my blog on a weekly basis now, and somebody asked me a question about how the course is not blaming the victim because, you know, from looking at it in one particular way, they're like, you know, this sounds like it's blaming the victim. And so at first when I read the question, I was like, that's an awesome question, and I have no idea how to answer it. So I took it to the Holy Spirit, and I said, you know what, I just felt trust that the words would come, and it came to me in flashes. Like, it wasn't anything that I saw, but it was a feeling of this, like, these sort of flashes of what the answer would be, because what had to be addressed in answering that question was level confusion. And so the it came to me, like, just from asking the Holy Spirit. And so that's how, also, too, with doing this study group now, because this is my first time doing a study group, if I get a chance to look at the reading ahead of time and I'm not sure about what something means, asking the Holy Spirit within me to help me understand, it usually comes through. So, and that's new. Like, I never, you know, had any experiences like that before. So that's an example, Paula, with what you were just talking about. It's all about the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
It's so good to hear stuff like that as well, because I guess I have so many moments of, like, just doubting and feeling like, what am I doing this for? Like, I don't, you know, it's that ego thing.
Yep,
I don't hear
yep.
a voice in my head. Nobody's talking to me, you know.
Right.
So it's like, I feel like, oh, well, it can't be. Like, I'll never experience that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it's so great to, you know, hear that. I guess it's just like a matter of having faith and again, like, willingness.
Yeah, just willingness, the tiniest little bit of willingness. Yep.
I've been reading your blog, by the way, Corinne. I think it's really good.
Oh, thank you.
I really, really enjoy it. Every topic, I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is amazing.
Thank you. It's fun. It feels right to do, so that's what I'm doing. So.
And I love the little willingness flower at the side. It's
oh,
so
the little
cute.
Heart, yeah. That was
yeah.
another thing that just came to me in an image to have on the side of my website, like, you know, the text is in the center of the page. Off to the left side is a little heart that says willingness underneath it, just as a constant reminder that that's all we need, a teeny tiny bit of willingness. So thank you, Carly.
You're welcome.
We're at the top of our hour now that we're doing 8 to 9 Eastern time. So.
Oh, that's why. I was like, oh, I didn't realize I missed it. It's 8 to 9 now every night?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
On Wednesdays,
okay.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Good, good. Any other final questions or comments?
I have one more question. This might be like
sure.
kind of a big question. But I was listening to Kenneth Wapnick talk about it was something like the Living A Course in Miracles, like, lecture.
Oh.
And he was kind of, like, joking about how A Course in Miracles students always, like turn to the Holy Spirit for everything. Like, what kind of dinner should I eat tonight? And stuff like that. And I guess And he was kind of like, oh, well, that's not really what the Holy Spirit does. It's not what the Course is supposed to do. But I don't know. It just really changed my idea of the guidance that the Holy Spirit can provide. Like, I don't know. I really, right now at this stage, because I feel like everything is real around me, I don't recognize it as an illusion.
Right,
I really
right.
want that guidance. I really, oh. really, like, that's what I would love. I guess that's what I would want support in. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And if that's where you're at, like, that's where you'll get it. What he was talking about is that, you know, that whole idea of, yeah, exactly what you're saying. Like, you know, Holy Spirit, what should I eat for dinner? Should I turn right or should I turn left? You know, asking those
yeah.
types of questions where what the Course is, what listening to the Holy Spirit is an actual, according to the Course's teaching, is actually doing is the Holy Spirit is leading us out of this world. The Holy Spirit is leading us back to fully remembering who it is that we truly are, who we are in truth. So that's the guidance of the Holy Spirit on the level that he was talking about, where it's about coming to know that we are perfectly safe, that there's absolutely, you know, no loss in, you know, letting go of the body or leaving this world. Because even, you know, hearing me say that just then, if anybody, you know, closely pays attention, you might notice a little blip of fear, like, what? The Course is leading us out of this world? And that fear is exactly, you know, that fear is coming from the ego, because we believe in the ego and we feel like we're going to lose something if we let it go. So I think he was referring to the guidance of the Holy Spirit on that level, where, you know, we are being guided to remember who it is that we truly, truly are. And it's not about guidance for making this world turn out okay. Like, you know, oh, if I go right, run into a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow or something, and it will live happily ever after, you know, like it's not necessarily about that. But if that's where, you know, we are at, and if, you know, again, the Holy Spirit is going to speak to us in ways that we are open to hearing. If we can't listen directly, it's going to be coming through, you know, another person perhaps. So, what you need, and it says too that you will be guided with the practical, so you can ask those questions. This is a practical course, and so I think
well,
what
I
he
think,
was saying.
Yeah.
Oh.
Sorry, Corinne. Go ahead.
Oh.
Finish.
No. Go on.
I was just gonna say, like, I think it's important to remember that any person is gonna have their own interpretations of what is being said, and. Really, the bottom line is your relationship with your inner guidance system.
Yes.
And if you want to ask for help about what to eat that day, then go ahead. You know,
yeah.
some people, that's really important. So
I think that is such a good point, because, you know, if I had remembered to do that this afternoon, my life would have gone so much easier. I mean, you can have a happy day if you remember to do that in
uh-huh.
every situation. It's
right,
the most
right.
practical thing we could possibly do in every situation. But, you know, Paula gets out there and what are you going to do?
Right.
Like, rein her in. And again, let it go. That when I got in the car tonight, that was I'm not taking this home with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like a residue, and it was like, no, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I could choose peace instead of this.
Yep.
And with the Holy Spirit's help, it's a total given.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you brought this up.
Me too.
thank you so much for it. Just is exactly what I needed to hear to kind of. I don't know, just it really encourages me.
Good. And Deidre, thank you for what you just said too.
Our tendency is like to, as humans with egos, right? We're like, oh, such and such expert says this. And we tend to sort of create an idol out of someone
mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
they say they're an expert when really
right.
My sister used to say, we're not sheep. I like that. We can think for ourselves. We're not sheep.
Right, right. Oh, very good. Wow, thank you, everybody. It's always
you,
a pleasure,
Colleen.
And always an honor. Okay, so we'll conclude, and we'll be back at 8 p.m. Eastern Time next Wednesday.
Hooray!
Hooray!
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Everybody have
thank
a great
you.
Week.
Night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.